Hey, it's Joyce. Every week, I have the chance to chat with an interesting, inspiring human and to share that conversation with you. Join me as I walk and talk with entrepreneurs, adventurers, and all sorts of people who are working hard to empower women and make the world a better place. Now listen, this is not some highly polished, formally produced podcast. It's just two humans out for a walk with the chance to learn from each other. So lace up your sneakers, head out the door, and join us.
Hey everyone, Joyce here, welcoming you to today's Walk and Talk, where our guest is Elise Mucellis. Elise is the author of the best-selling book, Food Story, Rewrite the Way You Eat, Think, and Live. She holds 4 certificates in holistic health and integrative healing. She is on the Environmental Working Group Board of Directors and has been a National Institutes of Health grant recipient for 5 years in a row. So that tells you that lots of people out there really respect the work that she's doing. She is a sought-after speaker, host of the popular podcast Once Upon a Food Story, as well as a pretty prolific writer. So Elise, my friend, thank you for being here today.
My gosh, Joyce, thank you for that introduction. And I definitely feel like we've known each other for a long time, even though we just met in March, right, in person.
Yep. So there's so much that I want to talk about with you. I want to start with a little bit of your philosophy around food. And then I want to take a step back to your history and what led you down that path. So starting a little bit, I want everybody to understand that your book is as much a workbook and a journey as it is a sort of here's the research, right? So can you just share sort of top line what your beliefs are around topics of nutrition and our relationship with food?
Yeah, absolutely. So I love how you shared that the book is more of an experience, because that's what I was hoping for the reader, not just, you know, another book that you're shaking your head and you're like, yes, yes, I get it. And then you go out back into your life and then you haven't really like done anything to like kind of solidify that knowledge, so, or wisdom or whatever. So I wrote the book Food Story. It was bubbling inside of me for a long time because I wanted to give people a different lens to view the way that they related to food. Because so often when we think of our relationship to food, we think of us and food. And for many of my clients and people in my community and people I've just spoken to over the years, when you say, tell me about your relationship with food, it's like, whoa, you know, it's complicated, or why don't we, let's not go there, right? But when you think about it in a different way and think about it as a story, like something you're born into. We were talking about this earlier, and how you have different chapters and there's different characters and there's villains and heroes and plot twist, and you know that it's always evolving, that it's a story, there's a flow, you know, that it's not just finite, you and food. It sort of opens up, like, you know, it helps people realize, wait, it isn't just me. It isn't just, you know, I don't lack willpower, which is a common thing you hear, or it's just, you know, it's not my fault. It's a great way to release a lot of that guilt and shame, because when you understand that there's this whole story contributing to you and how you relate to food, it shifts how you think about it, and it can help lift that blame. So that's where Food Story came about. And it was mostly because I had to have a different way to talk with my clients. I had to have a way that felt inviting and opening and not, you know, leaving them closed off. So you asked, does that make sense to you? I mean, did you start thinking about your food story after we met and had conversations?
Yeah, and one of the things I just want to circle back to, and then I want to take a step back to your story and how you got involved in this work. But I think what I take away from that concept of food story also is around this idea that it's, number one, not linear, and number two, not black and white. I think so many of us try to dial our relationship with food down into good or bad, success, success or failure, gained weight, lost weight. Like, it's so much more nuanced than that. And if we see it like a story with the characters, with the plot twists, with the up and the downs, with the, you know, it's like the hero's journey of our food story.
Right. And I love what you said about it not being linear, because it is so true. And probably a lot of the people listening, and I myself also, like, I felt like I was going back almost to a place where I hadn't been when the pandemic first hit and our lives changed, you know, and the way my relationship with food. And, instead of getting upset and mad at myself once, since I've done this work with Food Story, I always look for the lesson. So when we do have the setbacks, when we do fall, I don't even like to say fall off track, but when we get to, when we're doing things that we know aren't serving us as well, there's always like a lesson. Our body's trying to tell us something. And so when you can also soften, you know, that instead of saying, like you said, I'm so bad, or thinking in terms of, you know, black and white, but like being okay in that gray area, it changes a lot. And, you know, all those negative thoughts and the self-talk that so many of us have.
And there's another piece of this, at least for me personally, when you were talking about the lessons that our relationship with food during the pandemic perhaps tried to teach us. The world is still trying to teach me the same lesson over and over again. Would you like to hear what it is?
Because I would
love to. It came to mind when you said that. Okay, here's the lesson. It's not really complicated. Sitting at your computer and mindlessly eating is not good for anybody. I'm just saying, or at least it's not good for me. I'm pretty sure it's not good for anybody.
You still do it?
Oh yeah, I do it every day.
Right, so because you're productive and, you know, multitasking feels, you know, better than just like sitting alone. But you have to get, you know, try it and even feel a little uncomfortable for, you know, 10 minutes. Of not multitasking with eating. It's funny that you mentioned that one, because you're definitely not alone with that theme. I have been on multiple podcasts where the host has said almost the same thing, you know, maybe different scenarios, but it's always, you know, that it's not, they're not just eating. And so I have this line where I say, we eat and, you know, we eat and run out the door. We eat and, you know, work at our computer. We eat and watch television. We eat and answer emails, like eat and so many different things, right? Scroll through social media, but we don't just eat. And I am such a proponent of just eating. Obviously, you know, you can't do that all the time every day and like with our busy lives, but if you try it, even 5-10 minutes, it makes such a difference in the way that your body, you know, absorbs the nutrients and the way that you can really, you know, hear the signals that and messages on whether you're full or, you know, satiated, or if you even liked what you're eating.
Yeah, for sure. All right. I want to be sure that we have the opportunity for you to share what led you on this journey. So let's dial it back. And if you would share a little bit of your relationship with food, if you're cool with sharing that, and kind of how this work became important to you.
Absolutely. But I'm going to give you the abbreviated version so that we can, you know, your food story has been unfolding your entire life, but I'll give you a couple pivotal moments for me. So first is to just mention that I was born and raised in LA in California, you know, so that says a lot right there, right? You know, that I was, that, you know, there was a lot of conversation at that time about being skinny, you know, it wasn't necessarily about being healthy. And I just, you know, in our household, like my mom, you know, and her friends brought their own salad dressing to dinner. So I grew up feeling very aware, you know, about what I was eating and, you know, just about like fat was bad at that time, you know, I'm putting that all in quotes because I don't believe that now. So, you know, I just was always, I want to say borderline obsessed with, you know, with food and health. And, you know, some of it was positive and other was, you know, like I said, more obsessive and not helpful towards my relationship with food. But I remember when I was 9 years old, I went to a doctor's visit. And at that time, I was told by the doctor that if I lost 5 pounds, I could get my ear pierced. And that, you know, I didn't realize, and actually until later into adult life, how that was so significant and stayed with me, because it was a message about, you know, control and about, you know, like calories in, you know, I just learned to eat less, exercise more, all those messages we were told. And that really started my, what I call, like started me down a role of what I call like eating perfectionism. You know, I have perfectionistic tendencies, and it definitely showed up in my relationship with food. And so another pivotal moment for me was when I share this in the book, and I'll give you a very short version of it, is when I was graduating from law school, and I went with my then boyfriend, who I was very serious with, to a dinner that had taken 3 months to get a reservation. And it was like kind of fancy and French, and all the foods that weren't on my allowed list, you know, another air quote there, you know, because that was a self-imposed rules. And, you know, I could see, like, I thought at that point, like, it's not affecting him. I'm having, you know, I'm not enjoying the meal. This isn't the food I like to eat. But I didn't, he basically broke up with me at the table. And it was such a wake up call, because we were talking about getting married and having kids. And the wake up call was really that your food story isn't your own. You know, like, you're obviously passing it on to your children, but also the people you eat with, you talk to about food, that you're, you know, around, everyone is affecting one another's food stories. You know, we do that as a culture too. And so it was just that first time that I realized, like, that conversation in my head really wasn't my own. And that's when I started to, you know, I wasn't in health and wellness. I was actually, like I said, graduating from law school. I was going to start my legal career and work at the Department of Justice. And I was, you know, I knew that I had to change. And it wasn't a change for him. That was just the wake-up call. And I went back to California, where I was from, and I started to cook. And I started to heal my relationship with food. And then, P.S., fast forward, we got married. I practiced law. And then at some point, I realized that the practice of immigration law, that I'm so passionate. Everyone always come to me and ask me questions about food. I was making my kids baby food. Like, I just loved everything about being healthy and striving to be that way. And so I ended up, we're going now to 2010. I'm skipping a lot of parts and chapters, but and got certified in nutrition in holistic nutrition from the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. And I worked with a lot of people on what was on their plate. And they were like really smart, mostly women, like sophisticated, savvy, knew so much they could write their own blog. And I just realized that there was this missing piece, that it wasn't just about what we were eating. And I read a book called The Slow Down Diet by Mark David, who became my mentor. And it was talking about how your thoughts, you know, like, that what you think while you're eating and your mindset around food plays such a major role in the nutrition equation. And those were not the exact words, but that's how I took it. And it was such an aha for me, because I thought I was like the poster child of healthy eating, you know, like doing all the right things. But inside, even though I was now eating and I had less rules, I was still very worried about doing everything the right way, you know, that would be the right way for my family, the right way for my community. And so I was eating all the kale and the quinoa and making these green smoothies and, like I said, you know, cooking my kids' chicken nuggets and all that stuff. But I was inside still stressed, even though the stress was about being healthy. I didn't recognize it as a stress. And when I heard what happens, which maybe we'll talk about that in another question, but what happens physiologically to your body when you're having stressful thoughts, I knew this was what I needed and what so many other people needed to know and to use to be able to heal, you know, getting into the mindset. So I'm going to stop for a second, because that was a lot, and ask you if you have any questions. And did that make sense, what I said to you about the stress was sort of disguised, you know, like it was under the like guise of like healthy eating and, you know, like sharing all these really clean foods. But it was really, I was inside struggling.
What comes to mind? Well, many things come to mind, but we around here talk a lot about walking for your mind, your mood, and your body. What's so interesting is that people often come to 99 Walks, why they think they're coming here. And if we ask them, which we do, most people, and when I say most, I mean most, will say, I want to lose weight. And I suspect when most people come to questions around nutrition, they come to it with this eye towards, I want to lose weight, right? That's the linear. And it's like it's like we talk about it through the same lens. Like I will say, you think you want to walk to lose weight, but what you really want, what we really want for you is to align your mind, your mood, and your body, because it's all connected. And it's like you come to this question of nutrition and food through that same lens. Like we can't just talk about what you're putting in your mouth.
Right. I always say that food is the doorway. So maybe like for you, it's like that the weight loss or changing your body or whatever it might be. It's kind of the doorway. But then people, once they're in, it's really at the end of the day, it's about feeling good, you know, all of this. And when you connect all the pieces, that's the bottom line, right? Because even if you learn what to eat, or even if you're walking, for example, but you're still stressed out or having those thoughts, you know, that are disrupting like peacefulness in your life, then you don't feel good, right? So you need everything to come together to be able to feel good.
So Elise, where do you start with people who say or think, even if they don't say it, I will feel good when I lose the weight. I will feel good when I stop binging the chocolate chip cookies. I will feel good when I.
Right. Yeah. Right? That's when then.
Yeah. Right. That's the thinking. Like I have 30 pounds to lose. I'll feel good when I lose the weight and then I'll deal with the other stuff. But it's kind of the opposite.
I agree with you. It is the opposite. Like what makes you feel good? I think people lose sight of that. And that's where, you know, asking the harder and deeper questions, you know, where did this, and unpacking, the habits and the mindsets and really, digging in, you have to do that work, because it's not, you're never going to be happy, or your computer lunch, you know, the multitasking keeps showing itself to you. Right? Because that's what happens until you resolve the underlying issues. It's going to keep showing up in some way. You're going to keep getting those messages and keep having the symptoms, until you dig in and go deeper. And so, I mean, also you want, like, pleasure is such a, just using your example, pleasure is actually a metabolism booster. And it makes you feel good. So if you're depriving yourself, I'm not allowed to feel pleasure, or I can't feel pleasure until that when then, or I call it the story of later, right? That's, you're not going to enjoy yourself until then. Like that doesn't seem right. Like a lot of people put their happiness on hold, like till their kids are grown, they got to take care of everyone else first. But it doesn't work like that, because when you're happier and when you're when you're taking care of yourself, it affects everyone around you. So I don't know that was kind of a roundabout way of answering your question, but I don't believe in the I'll be happy when. You can't guarantee it, So what are the things that make you happy now? Because that's how you're going to get to the place where you want to be, is by doing it joyfully. You got to put joy in the equation. I call it an essential nutrient.
Joy is an essential nutrient. So I'm reflecting a little bit on my own pivotal moments throughout my life with respect to food. And I have a similar story, actually. I was 8 years old when I was put on my first official diet. So yeah, welcome to that club. But do you encourage people to spend a little bit of time reflecting and trying to identify those moments in their lives?
Yes, because that it's still in your body, even if we're not aware of it, and you have to do something to release it. I mean, I'm not a psychologist, so I don't, you know, but, and, or a trauma expert, but I do know that they're like trauma with a little t, you know, that those kind of mm-hmm. things that you and I both experience, they're traumatic. I've had a guest on my podcast who talked about when she was in kindergarten, she was teased by boys on the bus, you know, calling her names and commenting on her body. And that stuck with her. And from that point on, she became an emotional eater, you know, and so we don't like, a mom can make a comment, like give the sister a treat and say, you know, you shouldn't have seconds or you shouldn't have that. And you don't think about it, but it becomes something that, you know, is traumatic for you. Why did your sister get it and you didn't get it? And what does that mean? And there, you know, and you internalize it and it affects your choices. So I really do get into this in the book, and I, in my one-on-one work with clients too, is, you know, sometimes you have to go back to that place to be able to release it. And sometimes you need to go back to that place to connect the dots. Like, you know, I've had clients who were like, you know, had habits of sneaking food. And then when I'll ask, when did that start? They actually can pinpoint it to, like, you know, a stressful time in their teens, or when their father was commenting about their changing body, you know, and they, you know, and so then they ended up like bringing food to their room because they didn't feel comfortable eating in front of him at the dinner table, things like that. So our food story is deep, you know, and you have to be willing to do it. But once you understand, it can also help you release some of the blame, like, oh, no wonder I do that. No wonder I think that way. Is that true for me now?
And I think one of the things that many of us need to wrap our minds around a little bit, and this is so interesting to me, because I had the opportunity and the honor of speaking with so many people who have spent a lot of time in this world, and some incredibly talented and well-educated dietitians and all the people. And most people who do this work professionally and who have a really healthy relationship with food, invariably at some point they say, and I love food. So I think some of us who have these challenging relationships with our own food stories, we have like this love-hate relationship with food. And I think there's, I don't know, maybe this perception that the only way to tame your food demons is to, you know, kind of hate the food. And I think it's kind of the opposite. You really have to love it. Does that make any sense? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And you, it made me think of something that I talk about a lot. And that oftentimes when we think of food, we're like, what is it going to do to me? You know, so that's like, will I be bloated? Will I get tired? You know, will I gain weight or whatever those thoughts are? And I try to empower people to make a little bit of a mindset shift and think about everything food can do for you. So bring you energy, you know, connect you with the earth, with people, you know, if you're enjoying a meal together, you know, nourishment in so many senses of the word, you know, it's soul nourishment. It's obviously, you know, going to nourish your body and your cells in other ways too, but, you know, it can change your mood. And so when you start thinking about like all the things that the food can do for you, it becomes more of your friend, you know, and that's a really great way to look at food. If you're someone who's been very critical and, you know, tentative or judgmental about, you know, the way, you know, food and how it affects you. So just making that little shift.
Yeah. And even more so, it's, you know, you talk about, I love thinking about my relationship with food through your lens of a food story. And kind of, I want it to be a love story.
I love that you said that.
Well, right?
Can
yeah.
Yeah, no, I get it. And I feel like it's, for so many people, like what you just said sounds so foreign and unattainable because they've never felt joyous around food. You know, it comes with a lot of, like, to use a word that we both didn't want to use, but it does come with a lot of baggage because you're born into food story. It's not just the way that you relate to food. It's also like kind of what you observe, you know, your parents doing or whoever, you know, fed you most of the time. And all the messages from diet culture that were taught to fear food instead of, you know, think of food as not just celebratory, but something, you know, that like we do every single day, multiple times a day, that can bring, you know, so much to us. So, I mean, you have to eat, you know, so why not try to turn it more into a love story? I was, you know what you just said, some when you were saying that, I was just thinking about, like, the things you do day in and day out are what will help create that, like, love story. And, you know, do you have rituals around food, like things that feel really, you know, enjoyable to you? Like, I go to the
Just eating handfuls of chocolate chips while I'm sitting at my computer at 2 o'clock in the afternoon count?
Well, does it make you feel good? Or are you afterwards like, oh, why did I do that? And I shouldn't have eaten the chocolate chips, right?
You know what? There's actually an answer to that. And if it is a small serving of chocolate chips, I feel good about it. If somehow that morphs into handfuls of chocolate chips, I feel not so good about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand that. But then that's also, oh, you should do my chocolate meditation. So, you know, I think it's also about your mindset too. Like, are you enjoying it? Are you actually tasting it? Because it doesn't feel very satisfying if you're like responding to emails and like shoving the chocolate chips in your mouth and you don't, like, you could be eating anything and not even, because you're not really tasting it. And that's
point. Like, I want to make my relationship with my chocolate chips, because dark chocolate will always be a part of my life, I want that to be a love story, not a battle.
Well, okay, so I have to just tell you about the chocolate meditation. So it's in chapter 8 of my book, but it's something I do every time I do a workshop or speak. I bring people through this, and just in one sentence, it's just a very exaggerated exercise where you bring all your senses to the table and taste the chocolate and really get into it. It's slow, and, you know, it's just a way for you to realize how most of the time we're rushing through. And I would love for you to do that with your chocolate chips, because you'll never go back to that, like, old way of eating chocolate chips again once you can taste the texture and the flavor and, like, how, you know, there's all these little nuances that you don't notice when you're, you know, shoving it in your mouth.
Exactly. That's going to become my chocolate love story, and it's going to change everything. Okay,
Chapter 8.
Oh my gosh. So we're moving so fast and running out of time, which is driving me crazy. So before we do the sign off and where people can find you and all of that, because I really do want to do that, what's the first step for people? Buy your book and do the whole story. So we'll talk about that, but like, what's the one thing we can do today to start to change our food story?
Well, I think first, even acknowledging, because some people say, I don't even have a food story. A food story can be any. I mean, you can have, your food story doesn't necessarily have to be dramatic and traumatic. You know, there's lots of people who have a food story, but we all have a food story, whether you're 80 or 8. You know, you have a food story. And I think acknowledging the food story, and really start to think about it, and just think about some of the chapters. And I would encourage people to maybe just start with like one thing about their food story that they would like to be different. You know, one thing that you'd want to change, because we want people to have a positive outcome from this. And then when you think about whatever that one thing is, where did it start? Did it start like Joyce and I had these experiences when we were 8 and 9? Was it when you moved, you know, and or during like a parent's divorce? Like, think about the one, you know, health or eating challenge that you have that you'd like to change, and just start to reflect on how, like, how it came to be. And I think that just like really creates an awareness and can take you through like the history and, you know, seeing that it's not, quote, your fault, you know, and that like maybe you were young and impressionable and listening to a bunch of commercials and messages and reading all the magazines. So that's a where to start. And then slow down when you're eating, and notice how you feel. Just notice how you feel, because so many of us are too much in our heads or planning to-do lists or working on our computers or whatever. Be there with your food. That changes a lot.
Love it. All right. So the book is Food Story. It is bright yellow and beautiful, which I know is your signature color. Talk to us about where people can find the Food Story, your new course, when that's going to become available, and where to find you on all the social channels.
Okay, so first things first, I'm waiting for my yellow poles, just so you know, because it is
I
my color.
Know.
And I have to tell you, I love my poles, and I walk everywhere, and you've been so influential, so I just wanted to share that. My podcast is called Once Upon a Food Story, and you must tune in on June 8th because my guest is Joyce. So I'm so excited for that episode. Yeah, so that is coming. So you can find that wherever you listen to podcasts. My book is sold, you know, in all the major online retailers. Some of the bookstores have it. You can always request it if you prefer to support your local bookstore. My website is my name, elisemisels.com. I also am on social media now by my name, and Instagram is definitely my baby. And I do farmers market stories every single Sunday, and that's really fun and a great way to connect with your food. If you want to watch that, just see how my food stories become a love story. And did I miss anything? Oh, my course. It's in the works. You'll be hearing about it this summer. So the best thing would be to get on my email list, because I always sell my email list first. So Joyce, oh my gosh, thank you so much. I feel like I can talk. We need to do like walk a marathon and talk the whole time, because
I know. Don't you feel like this went in like 3 minutes?
Yes, I had so much I could have said, but I love what you're doing, and walking is such a great way to also improve your food story, because it just helps with all the things you mentioned, mind, mood, your body, and it just puts you in a more relaxed, better state to think clearly.
Because they're all related, all the things. Thank you, Elise. It was so nice to hang out with you a little bit today. And we will be sharing this Walk and Talk as a podcast in the next day or so. So if anybody wants to go back and listen, you will find it in all the places podcasts live. Thanks, everyone, for being here. Elise, thanks again for sharing your wisdom.
Thank you, Joyce. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for joining us for today's Walk and Talk. Catch new episodes featuring inspiring guests every week in the 99 Walks app and all the places podcasts live. Until then, I wish you happy trails.